We are listening to Feral Jackson. Feral is this week's The Mix Files interview. And you are in for a treat. You are listening to us on Mixstream Radio from Mixposure.com. This is the Mix Files. I'm Cooter. Have yourself some fun.
How'd you get into music, Feral?
You know, I started when I was very young. I was probably 12. And I had an uncle that gave me this. I went over to his house, and my aunt and uncle were babysitting or something. And he had this old acoustic guitar, and it had four strings on it. You know, the B and E were busted off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I messed around with it, and he said, "Hey, you want that?" So I took it home, and I had no idea. And what came with it was this little book that showed you about three different songs and maybe three or four different chords.
Yes.
The G, the D, the easy ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the dreaded F. The
I can relate to that.
And so I just plunked around on it for a while. And then, you know, I mean, I had a few buddies interested in it. And I really learned guitar from my buddies and friends, just watching. You know, of course, that was I'm an ancient guy, and so that was pre-Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Beatles came out in, I don't know, 62, 3, whatever they were, on Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah. I actually saw them. I watched it.
I did, and too.
Yeah, and I was hooked.
Yeah.
And went out to a local pawn shop, found me a little amp and an electric guitar. By that time, I kind of knew how to tune it. And sort of, I was working on stuff by, you know, Gloria, G-L-O-R-I-A, by, you know, them, by the group Them.
I remember it.
You know, Van Morrison actually was a singer. And that's really where I got started. And it just escalated from there. I was playing in a band when I was, 16. And I've played constantly until the last couple of years. So, I mean, that's a big span, probably 40 years, more than 40 years. More than 40 years of playing and actually making money at playing.
Good for you.
You know, I played on a regular basis, and it funded it. You know, you really never make money. You just sink it back into the equipment.
Most of us just hope it will pay for itself.
Yeah, and it did in my case.
Yeah.
I mean, I've bought a lot of nice guitars, amps, and, you know, I have more than I can play, but, you know, some of them I bought new, and now they're collector's items.
How did you find Mixposure, Feral?
You know, I'm trying to think how I did. I believe I found, you know, I was on Mixposure. It was called something else.
Uh-huh.
I can't even remember now what it was called, but once in a while you will hear people refer to the old Mix.
Yes.
It was called something else. I don't even remember. But I believe Rob Grant kind of steered me there. I was on SoundClick, and mm-hmm. SoundClick is a kind of a free community, but, you know, you're limited on the quality of samples that you can upload. It's 128 unless you pay, you know, to get more. And I ran across Rob Grant playing all this, I don't know, I called it classic prog rock type music, something that always interests me. And as you can tell by my affiliation with the group Rayon Vert, but I kind of started talking to him, and he got me over there, I believe. I think that's how I got there. I'm either that, or I just found it online or something. Somehow,
yeah.
There, but. But it was a very unique community, and Mixposure has actually developed into something that's – there's no other site like it.
And, I agree.
Yeah. It's very interactive. You get to know folks like they're your best friends, and you've never even met them, never seen them. Maybe if you see a picture online or something, you know. But I just think it's a wonderful community.
Were you already doing any online collaborations before you came to Mixposure, or did that start after you got to Mixposure?
No, it really started after I got to Mixposure. I can't say that exactly. It really wasn't online collaboration. I would send hard disk to different people. In other words, I wasn't transferring it over the internet. Because I belong to this, and I still belong to this group called Saxon Sound, and it's a Yahoo group, and it's a unlimited membership, maybe, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 active people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good musicians there, but it's really to talk about recording, and some of those guys I had collaborated with. So I wasn't quite completely new to the process, but when you first start this collaboration process, it's very difficult to figure out how to align tracks within your song. And now when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about going back to 1998.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy now. You just look at it and you can align it. I mean, but those tools weren't available to me at that time, or I didn't have the knowledge of it. And you know, now you can do it basically by sight if you want, you know. And so a lot of the alignment I was having to do was by ear, and that's trial and error, you know.
Yeah.
You get it exact, but I would always manage to get it close enough. So that's where my first collaboration started, but really the really hardcore, intense collaborations came from my involvement with Mixposure and some of the artists like Joseph Rodriguez. Of course, all my collaborations with Rayon Vert, and I'm trying to think who else I did. Not many besides that, but I have done a few with other folks at Mixposure, but mainly Joseph Rodriguez and my involvement with Dr. C, Gary Carciello, and Rob Grant.
And that's Rayon Vert.
That's Rayon Vert. Yeah, that's
yeah. And that's mighty fine music there. Anybody listening to this may want to check that out. Are the songs that are listed on here, these are all on your page on Mixposure, correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay,
yeah.
So everything that's played during this interview is...
It's all my solo work. Now, there will be other artists playing in there, mainly drummers, but most of the stuff, most of the music, and it's all my writing, but most of the music is being played by myself also.
Cool. So anything that gets played during this interview, someone can just go to your page, Farrell Jackson, on Mixposure.com, and play these songs for themselves if they like.
And they can look at them on albums, because I've got three albums out, or three CDs out, and I categorize them. And as I sent you this list, I tried to go through in chronological order. I picked certain songs from the first album, some from the second, and some from the third.
Together, you're never alone. A crystal dew on a foggy morn is beholden. Yet begins its journey to its place of design. So hold on, don't fall to despair. Stand tall, there's hope in the air. Be proud to call this your home. Together, you're never alone. Blanket green spreads near and beyond, disappearing in the vanishing light. To the coming sunlight. So hold on, don't fall to despair. Stand tall, there's hope in the air. Be proud to call this your home. Together, you're never alone. Ooh. 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 cherubim and God adorned by mossy long time forgotten, once played straight, now askew. With a gaze of truth projecting out, watching all the world stroll by. No one listens to your cry when you hold a permanent sigh. Lessons can you teach cherubim of God?
Another one I want to ask you specifically about is The Train to Normal.
Oh, you know, Cooter, a lot of my songs, the best lyrics that I feel that I write are true lyric. And I try to take that story, they're always I try to make them as interesting as I can and follow the true line of the story. But The Train to Normal is a song about this guy named Floyd. I don't know his last name, but he was basically a transient or a bum, homeless guy that came to the city of Oakdale. And at that time, I'd say maybe 25 years ago, and he had matted hair, and it almost looked like a reggae Raza man, you know, mm-hmm. and that type of hair. And it was all matted, and he had long, and he walked around town. He wore an old army coat, and even in the summer, you know. Well, he became such a fixture in town that people started to donate things to him. And there was a bar across the river from the city of Oakdale. It's called the Hilltop Saloon, and there was a grove of trees behind it and a little camper shell. Well, this guy kind of took him in and, you know, made sure that he had a place, at least a roof over his head in the winter. Well, there wasn't much, nobody knew much about him except that he would come through town, and he wasn't a panhandler. He wouldn't panhandle. People would just kind of give him stuff. And he never talked much. And when he passed away after about 25 years, and they found him out on the hilltop in that grove of trees, sitting up against a tree. Well, one of our local reporters started doing some research, and they did a story on his life. And my lyric is based off of the story that I read in the newspaper. He was a machinist, and he just walked away from his job one day and jumped on a train, came to Oakdale, got off, decided he wanted to stay here. And he actually came from the Livermore area, and you heard me talk about Altamont. I think in the song I mentioned Altamont Pass. That's where the Rolling Stone concert was held. Well, there's a hill, a group of mountains there that separate the valley from the Bay Area. And he came from the Bay Area, rode the train over, got off in Oakdale. And so the idea of him walking away from a normal life on a train, that's where I came up with the title, The Train to Normal.
It's a cool title.
This song is based on a true story about a man that chose a different way to life. He lived the way he thought best, under the open sky, subject to the elements, and alone. His name was Floyd, and this is his story. You see, Floyd, he was a machinist by trade. He made a good living for his family, making part after part, day after day, that fit some machine somewhere. But one day, something snapped. Floyd finished the day's work, then he walked out the shop door with just the clothes on his back. He wandered to the rail yard, and without a second thought, he jumped into a boxcar, and he rolled over the Altamont Pass. The train to Normal keeps on rolling down the line. It's all a matter of choice, whether or not we choose to ride. A question of circumstance is difficult to define. He
strained and normal. Another man's slow suicide.
A night and a day on the rails took him inland to a San Joaquin Valley town. The climate seemed friendly there. That's where Floyd jumped off the train to normal. Well, panhandling and begging wasn't his way. He would pass through town, and folks just gave him handouts, a warm coat, coffee, and donuts in the cold months. Across the river at the Hilltop Saloon, the owner took a liking to Floyd and helped him set up shelter in the tree grove behind the bar.
The train to normal keeps on rolling down the line. It's all a matter of choice, whether or not we choose to ride. A question of circumstance is difficult to define. Is one man's train to normal, another man's slow suicide?
Well, Floyd stayed there for 20 years. It was a dry and peaceful sight. The perfect place to lose oneself across the way from the train to normal. On one particular hot summer week, no one had seen Floyd for a few days. He was very visible to all but himself, so someone called the barkeep.
They found Floyd leaned against a tree in his well-worn coat wrapped peacefully. He had passed away in the valley heat,
looking across at the train to normal.
The train to normal keeps on rolling down the line. It's all a matter of choice, whether or not we choose to ride. A question of circumstance is difficult to define. Is one man's train the normal, another man's slow suicide? The train to normal keeps on rolling down the line. It's all a matter of choice, whether or not we choose to ride. A question of circumstance is difficult to define. Is one man's train to normal, another man's slow suicide? Is one man's train to normal, another man's slow suicide?
One thing that I never do, Cooter, and a lot of folks find this odd, I never record an idea. I never record an idea. If I come across an idea when I'm plunking around on my guitar, I figure if I can't remember that in my head, it wasn't much of an idea. And so I never record anything until it's going to be a keeper song, a keeper track, a keeper song.
See, I'm kind of, I mean, I hear what you're saying and I understand it and it makes perfect sense. For me though, my memory's not good enough any longer.
I've lost some great ones. I don't know.
Let's see. I lost my train of thought there. I had another question I wanted to ask you. When you're writing songs, do you find that you have to wait for inspiration to come to you, or are you ever able to just sit down and make something happen in 15 or 20 minutes if you have to?
I could grab my guitar right now, and I could write you a song. No, so I don't wait for inspiration. It's great when inspiration comes about, such as the story of Floyd, the train to normal.
Right.
But I could, on any given moment when I pick my guitar up, I come up with an idea. I mean, that's just the way I do things. Now, not necessarily are they all good ideas, you know, but I could sit down and write a lyric. I could write a song in 10 minutes, front to back, just with acoustic guitar and have the lyric, the basic lyric done.
Some people are that way.
Let me clarify. It doesn't mean that I have my song done. It just means that I have the basic idea of the song front to back. I'll have a verse, I'll have a chorus, and I'll have a bridge.
Gotcha.
And then, but I don't record them. Now, it may take me, you know, 5 years to record that song. Who knows? I'm not typically, but I mean, there are some that I have now that I've started the initial recording of them, but the what I have are keeper tracks, but I've not gotten back to them. And so it takes me, I get the idea, I get the basic song, get the lyric, but it takes me a while to develop the complete song.
When you sit down to start a tune, do you have to have an idea before you start, or do you, if we were to say right now, Farrell, let's you and me write a song before this interview is over. I don't have any ideas.
Me either. I could write a song about please be safe, don't fall in, the animals are going to eat you.
They come from everywhere, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
But really, I don't have to have that. It's nice to have an idea or some kind of direction that you want to sit down, but really I sit down, pick up my guitar, and I'm just practicing. I want to keep my fingers nimble. I want to keep my voice healthy. I'll give you an idea of the song Orchid Faded Sky.
That's the next one I was going to ask you about.
Okay. I picked up my guitar one day, and I had just bought this little Telecoustic. Okay, it's a Fender Telecoustic. Mm-hmm. It looks like a Fender Telecaster. I think the year's 2000, but it's got a back like an Ovation guitar made out of that mold. And it's hollow. And it has a piezo pickup like an acoustic guitar. So it's kind of in between. It has an electric guitar neck. Anyway, I picked it up and I strummed it and my hands went to this chord. Now, don't ask me why my hands went to this chord. Well, this chord happened to be, it's the opening chord to Orchid Faded Sky. It's a couple little chords if you listen to it. And it's just this little finger picking thing. And I said, you know, all of a sudden you stop and you go, wow. Let's work with that and start working with it. And pretty soon I have a chord structure. I've got an idea of a melody. And then I went back and sat down and wrote the words. And it's a very Beatlesque type song.
Mm-hmm.
And so the interesting part about recording it, I've listened to a lot of Beatles, like most people, like you have. And, you know, I've been influenced by them. And so you start reading a lot of stuff, and you read how they recorded their initial recordings. And I tried to record this song just like they had recorded. In other words, you'll hear some sort of double tracking on the lead vocal, but the harmony is, when it gets to the harmony chorus part, mm-hmm. my double tracked voice, it's all in one go. I just jump up to the harmony and sing the harmony. Then when it comes back down to the lead vocal part again, I sing with the lead vocal in unison. That's how Paul and John, they did their live stuff. And when they went in and did their original recordings, I had read that's how they did it. It gives a very full vocal sound, and it's very smooth, you know, but you just have to make sure and hit your harmonies right on when you go to them.
Yeah.
Another painted orchid faded sky.
I want to ask you about It Was a Trip.
The lyric, the song, this, my music, Cooter, is really a lifetime of collections, you know, and sometimes they just hang in my head until I'm ready to, you know, put them down to a song or write them out in a lyric. But the story, It Was a Trip, it's a true story. It happened in 1969. And I was at a concert with my wife-to-be, had no idea that I was going to marry her at that time, but we were at a UOP. We're still married, by the way. We're coming up on 40 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And she's a wonderful lady, and she puts up with my BS, you know. So I have to commend her for that. And all this musical stuff, as every one of you musicians out there know what it can be, how trying it can be on the spouse. But she's a lovely lady, and you know, I love her to death.
Well, I would say that she got pretty lucky too, I think.
Well, thanks. Anyway, back to the story. It was a trip. 1969. It was a concert at UOP. Now, this happened about the same time with the Altamont incident with the Rolling Stones and the biker gangs and all that. Well, this was running on the cusp of that, and I think it was an overflow from that concert, but. We went to see 10 Years After was the headliner band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you remember them.
Oh, yeah.
During this concert, we were sitting in the stands. It was at the stadium, their outdoor stadium. Uh-huh. We were sitting in the stands, and right before 10 Years After came on, there was this commotion down front. I mean, just right in front of us. And we couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. You know, their music was loud. You couldn't hear anything. And so pretty soon we see an ambulance guys come out, and they're carrying a stretcher, and they load this kid up on a stretcher, and they carry him out. And there's all kinds of commotion, security, and all that. Well, come to find out later, it was a confrontation between two rival motorcycle gangs. I don't know what gangs they were. I would imagine, you know, I don't want to mention the gangs. They might come and get me.
But, well, you've told us where you are, Farrell.
But so somebody pulled out a gun and started shooting. Well, this kid was shot in the head and killed instantly. Well, that was pretty much the end of the concert for us. Once, you know, we heard a little bit of 10 Years After, then we got the hell out of there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Come to find out, you know, this was in Stockton, California. I live about 40 miles from Stockton, and I came – come to find out, the kid that got shot was a high school acquaintance of mine, and that's just unreal. And you know, and so this whole scene was surreal to me, and it stuck in my head for years. One day I was playing with a tuning on a guitar, and this is like a C major tuning. There's a name for it, but open tuning. Mm-hmm. And the melody started to come out, and the words started to come out. So I just stopped, started writing them down, and I basically wrote the true story and tried to make it rhyme like we all do. And it took me a few days to get it just right, and that's how that song came about.
Also, ask you about mistakes and hindsight, if you don't mind.
No, I wrote that song as a message to my children that my son and daughter at that time were both away at college and really undecided what to do. And they would come home and, you know, talk with me. And they were undecided what they were going to do with their life. And I would tell them, hey, you know, you're thinking too hard about this because it will work out. You just get your education and make sure you have a degree and things will work out. And the idea of you learn, and I said, you're going to make mistakes, you know, but learn from the mistakes. And that's where the title Mistakes in Hindsight came from. Now that song, most of these songs are, I've written quite a few years ago. Cooter, I'd have to look at them, but that one was one of the first songs that I wrote and recorded on my new Fostex FD8 that I got, I think, in 1998. And so it's as I listen back to it, I like the song. I'm not really quite happy with the recording because I wasn't used to panning things, and so it's fairly close to a mono song, but I still like the song. But anyway, that's the story behind that song.
First time I went to your page on Mixposure, and the first thing that struck me was, good Lord, this man is a prolific songwriter. I mean, you have, at least you did at the time that I stopped by that first time, tons of songs on there.
I've got 59 posted up right now. Now, a lot of this stuff I've had for years, but I've never really had the means to make a decent recording or how I thought it should sound. And the introduction of this digital age and digital recorders that were affordable for folks like us, songwriters, to get our ideas down was a godsend to me.
It opened up a whole new world, didn't it?
It certainly did.
Yeah.
Able to layer tracks and then go back in and edit them or bounce tracks without losing quality was something that, I mean, I've done the same thing like a lot of folks have. You take two little reel-to-reel recorders or two cassette recorders, and you start bouncing back and forth, and you'll add, but you never have the control. And each bounce, you're going to lose quality and pick up noise, and you just don't do that with the digital stuff. So in 1998, I started, and I had a backlog of songs that I just kept, you know, going after. Some of them were just ideas, not really full songs, but it got me on the path, and I would pick up songs as I was doing this, and or ideas.
Is there anything you'd like to add that we haven't talked about, Farrell?
Just in talking about songs, okay. I want to talk about one more song.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The song Cobble Wobble. I like, if you'll look through some of my music, yeah, I'm serious with it, but there are times when you've got to break from the seriousness and have a little fun with it, and have fun with the lyric, and have, and Cobble Wobble's kind of a corny song, it's a party song, but it's a very infectious song. Now, I've got
nothing
my music.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I've got my, it's got a great hook in it, and it's a sing-along, you know, mm-hmm. And I've got my music on, I've had my music, this particular album, on CD Baby, and you know that distributed to iTunes and I don't know 10 different sites. Well, 90% of my revenue and downloads, and not that I'm making buku bucks because I'm not, but I mean, there's a lot of downloads where you get paid for a stream, you know, and you might only get a part of a cent,
mm-hmm.
But 95%. Of my songs that are downloaded, the song is Cobble Wobble. It's amazing to me. I go and I look and I go, oh, there it is again. You know, somebody bought it, you know, or paid for it. So Cobble Wobble, again, is one of those true stories. 95, I think it was in 95, a buddy of mine said, hey, my brother-in-law is setting up this Sun Trip, it's called Sun Trip, down to Cabo San Lucas. And we're going to see if we can get a whole bunch of people to come in and get this package deal. But we don't want to bring our wives. We want to go fishing. And, you know, that's code word for let's go down and party for 4 or 5 days. and there was, counting me, there was 24 people, 24 guys that went down there. Okay.
That's a pretty good size group.
I only knew about five. Okay, five of them.
Uh-huh. And
there was this hotel called the Westin Hotel. It was brand new. They were trying to line out their staff. They were trying to line out their operations before they actually opened up to the public. And so they were offering this deal so that they could work out the kinks in their system. And so we went down to the Westin, and it was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles out of Cabo San Lucas. In 95, that whole area wasn't as developed as it is now.
I'm guessing 25 of y'all may have given them a lot of kinks to see if they could work out.
He did. But at the same time, we rented, I think, 5 VW buses, because that's what they offer you. And we would, this Westin was out on the ocean, but it was way away from town. And so we had the system of whoever took a VW bus, you know, the keys were always in it.
Uh-huh.
Whoever went out there to take it, you had to take at least 2 other people with you to town, you know, so that you could at least get back. Anyway, that's the words are.
So you could at least get back?
Yeah, exactly.
So somebody could drive, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, you would. And so every one of these stories that I tell in there about going to the Giggling Mar, and that's a bar, Giggling Mar, and leave Marcus upside down. Well, Marcus was a doctor. These are people that were professionals, you know, and we actually left him upside down because you could take a picture with your, with this big marlin picture holding you upside down. In other words, the fish caught you.
Uh-huh.
So we tied his feet and we hoisted him up. And then as we hoisted him up, we all left. So we left him there. We didn't see him for a couple of hours. It was a blast. It was a blast. So it was a fun time. Cobble Wobble was a real fun song. And so when I came back from that experience, I wrote the song just to kind of capture this, because I'm thinking, you know, that was such a great time, and I'm sure I can translate this into a song, and people will hear it and pick it up. And I believe that happens in this song. It just leaves you feeling good.
Cool.
Makes you part of that scene.
Cool.
With 23 friends of mine, we drank cerveza and we did some fishing. We had a really good time. We spent some time at the Giggling Marlin, where we left Marcus upside down. Tequila slammers and VW buses, you'll never guess what Michael found. Down in Cabo Wabo, Cabo San Jose.
Down in
place to get away down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo. We were jamming with a Mexican trio, singing all our favorite songs. The party went on and on. John was snoring and the ocean was roaring. It didn't bother me at all. We found our way down to Sammy's place, where Johnny B. Goode had a ball. Down in Cabo Wabo,
Cabo San Jose.
Down in Cabo Wabo,
Cabo Del Rey.
Down in Cabo Wabo,
south of L.A.
Down in Cabo Wabo.
A place to get away down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo. Down in Cabo Wabo.
Here we go.
I'd like to try to encourage as many people as possible to visit the chat room, because it's a non-threatening, easy way to meet people. And my collaborations online started by meeting people in the chat room. You know? How do you feel about that?
Well, that's how you get to know a person a little bit. You get to see their personality starts to come out. Even though you have to be careful in writing, you know, because some things can be taken out of context, because you can't see the expression on the person's face. You can't pick up the little innuendos that
vocal inflections and stuff like that. Yeah.
But so when I write, I'm careful not to do that, because I don't want anything misunderstood or, you know. But I think what it allows you to do is get to know some of the people. Again, you get to see their personality, their humor. You know, Vig is one that
Vig is a character, isn't he?
He's got a great sense of humor.
Gotta love that guy.
And once you figure it out, then you can play off of it, and it's entertainment. And you know, for us musicians, what better way to be entertained than having music and talking about music, or talking about whatever. You know, family, whatever. I mean, sometimes I'll just throw something up a thought that comes to mind, not even related to music. Well, I'll get some comments back on it, and you think, okay, hey, these are friends, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great, and it's a great way to establish relationships for collaborations.
Well, Farrell, you done good. I appreciate you, man. You got an extremely friendly, congenial voice, and I know that's what kind of human being you are, and I appreciate you consenting to be the first one that I interviewed, and this has been a whole lot easier for me than I thought it was going to be, because you're so great.
ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. We have been visiting with Farrell Jackson. Farrell has been Mixposure Artist of the Month. He's had the Mixposure Song of the Week. He's a wonderful musician, fine guy. And we hope you enjoyed the interview as much as Farrell and I enjoyed doing this. It was an honor. And you heard this on Mixstream Radio from Mixposure.com. This is The Mix Files, show number 3, as a matter of fact. I'm Cooter. And we hope you have had some fun. Farrell, brother, take us out. Mix Files, number 3.